I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Jeff Wheelwright. He's the author of the new book, The Wandering Gene and the Indian Princess, Race, Religion, and DNA. He will be speaking tonight at Bookworks in Albuquerque at 7 o'clock. And then on Sunday at the New Mexico History Museum at 2 o'clock, he will be giving a lecture and book signing. The lecture is called Secret Jews and Telltale Genes in New Mexico. Welcome, Jeff, to the Radio Cafe.
Well, thank you for having me.
So this is a fascinating story. It's a story partially about a young woman, Shawnee Medina, who gets breast cancer at the age of 27, and the gene she carried that put her and a lot of women in her family and in the San Luis Valley at risk for breast and ovarian cancer plays a role in the book. It's about the person. It's about the gene. How did you come across this story?
Well, I've been, as a science writer, writing about genetics for about 10 years and always looking for a really interesting story to exercise my interest in genetics, but also my developing interest in religion. And you have when I heard that a Jewish breast cancer mutation showed up in people of colonial New Mexico background, Hispano people, the academics call them, but they're, as you know, Spanish Catholic. So you have a Jewish gene going into people who are part Native American, Spanish Catholic, and then developing breast cancer and high risk of ovarian cancer. And when I got out to investigate this for a magazine story for Smithsonian in 2007, I found this one case. The young woman had already died, but everyone was still talking about her in the little villages that I call Culebra in the southern part of the San Luis Valley. They were still talking about this magnetic, beautiful person who died so young, and it has the final complication or interesting twist for me. She was a Jehovah's Witness, and the family had converted in the 1980s to the Jehovah's Witnesses. So there were already three very strong religions on top of my genetic interest.
It brings up your book all kinds of questions about religion and genetics. I mean, what do we even mean by a Jewish gene? How is that traced?
Yeah, that's a bit of a shorthand to call it Jewish gene. There, and it's a little bit unfair. Everyone has a copy of, let's say, the BRCA1 gene, the BRCA genes. It's just that this particular mutation that I write about is 10 times more prevalent in people of Jewish ancestry than another mutation might be in your family or in my family. So we all are carrying around potentially hazardous mutations, but in this particular case of this particular people, the risk of inheritance or the risk of being a carrier is much higher.
When you talk about genes that can be traced back 2,500 years, I mean, you're talking in the book about the time of Babylonian captivity, what kind of materials are they using that go back that far to analyze those genes?
Well, you're right that you can't. It's not like mastodon DNA, and somehow you unearth some miraculously preserved DNA. No, this estimate of the age or the origination, if you will, of this mutation of being 2,500 years old is a strong guess based on the fact that different populations of Jews, the Jewish diaspora, they all carry this mutation, but the spelling of it, depending on whether they're in Iraq or whether they're in Italy or whether they're in Ashkenazi Jews who are northern, central, eastern Europe, the spelling is always a little different. And so they rolled back the demographic clock. They figured, well, if the spellings are all different, they were all the same at one time, and when were all Jews together? Well, they were all together at the time of the Babylonian captivity. That's when the first major diaspora of Jews occurred in history, and so it's a strong, strong inference, a strong guess, if you will, that the mutation arose at that time.
Now, this mutation, which, I mean, basically causes a much higher incidence of breast and ovarian cancer in women, if it's so lethal, how did it survive?
Well, the main reason for its persistence is that it's not a recessive mutation. I think behind your question is the notion that you have to put two carriers together to be infected to develop a disease like in Tay-Sachs or cystic fibrosis, in which case carriers, you know, do tend to be healthy, but the disease, someone with the disease doesn't make it, and therefore the gene tends to wash out of the population. There's pressure to get rid of it if the person dies. However, if you're going to develop breast cancer from this mutation, you already will have had your children in most cases, even though it strikes very young women, or it can, as in my case, as in the case I write about. It's very possible that Shani Medina, had she chosen to have children, would have had them, and therefore the transmission would have gone on, while the mother was still living, and she dies later. But it's, for evolution's purposes, it's too late, if you will, to stop it.
Right. This whole set of questions really raises, I mean, there are so many questions about identity and the relationship between race and religion and how this information is received by the people who find out that they are carrying a Jewish gene and they're Catholic Hispanos who go back generations. How, I mean, I've been living in Santa Fe for over 20 years, and there's been quite a change in people who would not have accepted that they were crypto-Jewish or that they had Jewish heritage to a much greater acceptance in the time that I've been here. But still, I think it's kind of a shock for some people. What did you find?
Just as you say, I mean, the phenomenon of what's called crypto-Judaism, and I write about this sort of history of this field. It's a new field of scholarship. And it's true that people are getting used to the notion that they could discover they have Jewish ancestors. Some people, some New Mexicans, as you know, embrace it. They actually change their identity and consider themselves Jewish when they find out about it, either from family tradition or from some genetic analysis. But others won't have it and actually deny it. And there were relatives of the young woman I write about, who, particularly male relatives, who refused to participate in genetic counseling sessions that they really ought to have attended to learn about the risk of breast cancer in their female relatives. But they refused. They just said, no, that's not true, and I'm not going to any genetic counseling session to discuss it.
What is genetic counseling, and what were these sessions like in the San Luis Valley?
Well, genetic counselors actually were the ones who discovered this Jewish mutation in the Hispano population, because they're the ones who doctors will call them if they're treating somebody for cancer and they learn from the patient that there's a strong family history. Then they'll call a genetic counselor in who's not a doctor but understands the full package, if you will, of genetic risk, and they will counsel the patient and also the patient's relatives, because once you determine that somebody is carrying, let's say, this particular mutation, it really is very important, or it should be important that others who are at risk are informed, and getting them to the table to talk about the risks. Do you want to submit your blood, your DNA to an analysis? Because it's not guaranteed that everyone in the family will have it, but it does start a kind of a snowball, very problematic snowball effect, quite apart from whether it reveals your Jewish or not.
And so when people come to these sessions, I mean, there must be some sense of dread, like I might have this gene inside me, which is a ticking time bomb, and I can see people not wanting to know, but when they do know, what can they do with that information?
Well, I mean, if you're planning to have a family, if you're a male, and it can be carried, this mutation, in men just as well as women. So if you're going to start a family, you know, a man should tell his wife that. If you're a woman, if you're a young woman, it's obviously a much more charged situation. And the medical opinion is, I mean, you know, doctors like to intervene. Doctors like to kind of fix problems. So the notion of warding off breast cancer by having prophylactic mastectomies is many women are doing that. Then really the more difficult cancer that this is related to is ovarian cancer. And as you know, that's a very dangerous cancer, hard to treat. So if a woman is told or is strongly urged that when she's past her childbearing years to have her ovaries out.
And some women in that extended family actually have done that. They've had their ovaries taken out. They've even had hysterectomies.
Yeah, hysterectomies is not normally part of it. But yes, there are some quite informed members of the family I wrote about. And then there are others who frankly didn't want to know. And it took the sister, for example, of Shawnee, my protagonist, it took her 5, 6, 8 years before she finally got up the courage to go and learn if she was positive for the mutation, and she wasn't. And unfortunately, she is positive.
And what decisions did she make?
Well, she's not going to have the surgery, which is what many women do. And there is I write in the book about the advice of a conservative, ultra-orthodox rabbi named Joseph Eckstein, who's against all this DNA testing. And he says, you know, don't mutilate yourself, don't scar yourself, just take extra care in terms of breast health, get your mammograms, get an MRI, which is recommended for carriers, and be extra vigilant. So there is that path that women can take if they don't want to have surgery.
Well, and then there's Shawnee Medina, who refused all medical treatment and died fairly quickly thereafter. She took homeopathy and sort of healthy eating, which seemed not to have done anything at all. And I found myself wondering whether if she and her family had been more informed from an earlier age, and this had been kind of part of her world to have a deeper scientific understanding of what was going on, whether she might have made different choices and still been with us.
Well, that's true. My wife has a phrase from Serbia, you know, if my mother-in-law had wheels, should be a truck. So we can wish, or we can imagine what it'd be like to come from a background perhaps a little more sophisticated and make other choices. But as I write in the book, I started out being kind of skeptical of the choice she made, but by the end, as I was told by her relatives, it was her choice, and I saw the cultural conditioning that led her to it, which was not just being a Jehovah's Witnesses, but strong Native American tradition of treating with natural remedies on her mother's side, which she endorsed. She was opposed to synthetic medicines. She was very, she was vain, and she wanted her body, she wanted to look good, and she felt that she would be coming back to life, really, in the next world, and that's what witnesses believe. So there really were a lot of strong arguments from where she was sitting to lead her to the choice that she made, and I have to respect her free will on this.
It's such an interesting book because it really goes between the personal and cultural and genetic science and really weaves them all together in quite an unusual way. It's just an interesting and unusual work of journalism in a book form.
Well, there was an interview by David Steinberg in the paper last Sunday in your local paper, and he became quite interested in the formal question that you're asking, and I got a little carried away and started talking about cubism, But it's true that I wanted to carry a lot of streams or threads of information forward all simultaneously, the way in a Cubist painting by Braque or Picasso, you have these slashing planes of different currents kind of crashing into one another, and you're basically making a whole lot of fragments, and so that is that's perhaps the best, if not overly pompous, description of what I was trying to do.
Jeff Wheelwright's book is called The Wandering Gene and the Indian Princess, Race, Religion, and DNA. And tonight he will be speaking at Bookworks in Albuquerque at 7 in the evening. And then on Sunday, he will be giving a lecture called Secret Jews and Telltale Genes in New Mexico. It's at the New Mexico History Museum here in Santa Fe at 2 in the afternoon. Now, do you have a book website you'd like to give to us?
It's jeffwheelwright.com. And if you can spell Jeff and you can spell Wheelwright and put them together, you will find my website.
Jeff with a J. Jeff Wheelwright, thanks so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much for having me.